good to be with you all this evening. I think as someone mentioned the last time I was here, my voice was not doing very well, so I'm grateful that it has improved quite a bit since the last time. However, I have had a really bad cold all week, and now my ears don't really work very well. I can barely even hear my voice right now. They're pretty stopped up, so hopefully I can catch myself. And if you think I'm trailing off, then we'd be going a little too fast, or maybe just get my attention and hopefully keep things together as best as we can. But I'm very grateful and thankful for the invitation to be with you as we look at these amazing evidences of Christ's power and the miracles that he performs. Tonight we're going to be looking in Mark chapter 3, where Jesus heals a man with a withered hand. And I'm always amazed, not only just at the evidence of the power of Jesus and all these individual miracles, but it always truly is amazing the various lessons that are tucked deep within the actual individuals that he heals and the surrounding context surrounding it. We're going to look at some surrounding things that involve the way that Jesus heals this man and the things that kind of came up in this moment, and hopefully have some things that can help us. We're going to read here Mark chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. And it reads, "He entered again into a synagogue, and a man was there whose hand was withered. They were watching him to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, 'Get up and come forward.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to kill?' But they kept silent. After looking around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, he said to the men, 'Stretch out your hand.' And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately began conspiring with the Herodians against him as to how they might destroy him." Very interesting, where no doubt amazing compassion that Jesus has for this individual, and he demonstrates that compassion, his willingness to make his hand fully restored. But you catch the emotion that doesn't seem to almost fit there that preceded the actual miracle. It says he looks at everybody else who was watching to see if he was even going to do it. It says he looks at them with anger. He is so upset. He's so agitated. He's so mad at them. Because he realizes they don't care anything about this guy. They don't care whether or not his hand is made whole or not. He is using him simply as a pawn to see if they have some reason to have something against Jesus, to accuse him and strip him away of any of his credentials. And of course, it doesn't work. And Jesus is able to heal the man. But of course, in their mind, they're thinking if he does it on that particular day, in that particular moment, it's going to give them all the reason to have something against him. And really what it demonstrates is a certain attitude that if we're not careful can often creep up in our own attitude as we serve the Lord. A kind of pompous, kind of arrogant, kind of self-serving mindset that almost even breeds into kind of competitiveness against others and trying to see just how much straighter we can stand, you know, how holy, how over righteous we can really be. And so that's the endeavor to please the Lord in righteousness. But really all of that is coupled in his amazing mercy and his amazing grace to help sinners like us overcome our problems, overcome our weaknesses, so that we can be qualified to even be in his presence. And they seem to have missed that. And one of the reasons they missed that is really they have misunderstood the Sabbath itself. They misunderstood the Sabbath. Jesus later in a previous verse points out, because so many times they found almost the slightest area or instance to kind of jump all over the case of Jesus and his disciples, claiming that they were violating the Sabbath because they had made all these excessive extra laws surrounding that actual command that really had nothing to do with the purpose of that command. But if you go back to Mark chapter 2, there's a moment in verse 23. It says, "And it happened that he was passing through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples began to make their way along while picking the heads of grain. The Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and he and his companions became hungry? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for anyone to eat except the priest. And he also gave it to those who were with him." Jesus said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." In other words, they misunderstood the whole purpose, really, of the Sabbath. It was really a blessing to man. It was a time to give him rest from his work days, to basically have a day where he didn't have to work. And in that moment of rest, to really dedicate just all the time appropriate to get closer to God, to dwell on the goodness of God, the gracious holiness of God. All these things that would have hopefully brought them to a sense of compassion, really. Of appreciating a compassionate God who blessed them with all their hard work and their labor, who was blessing them with the rain and blessing them with the produce of all the food they were able to have, and just have a moment away from all that and realize God was the one who was giving all that to them. And really how unworthy we are to have such a compassionate God like that. They didn't look at it that way. They looked at it as if it's man's duty to try to keep this command to not work at all, and they just made all these restrictive requirements excessively, kind of bogged down in other people, and totally lost sight of that. They didn't look at Sabbath day being a blessing to man. They tried to make it as difficult as possible to even keep that command, and those who did had to be the most holy, righteous ones among them. And Jesus, which is amazing to me, constantly is breaking their rules on the Sabbath and constantly healing people all the time, particularly on the Sabbath. In fact, if you back up to Mark chapter 1, where Jesus believed the reason he would heal people on the Sabbath was to reclaim and redefine in their minds the purpose of the Sabbath was to be a blessing, not a burden on man. And Jesus constantly would work, or by definition of the Pharisees' line of keeping the Sabbath, would work on the Sabbath, showing again God's purpose of the Sabbath to remind them of a good, gracious, compassionate God who is blessing His creation. And for them to really draw close to that. But notice how many times Jesus would reiterate Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1, beginning in verse 21. It says, "They went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and began to teach. They were amazed at his teaching. And in the middle of his teaching, guess what? He healed someone with an unclean spirit on the Sabbath day." In verse 23, it says, "Just then there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit. And he cries out, saying, 'What business do we have with each other, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God.' And Jesus rebuked him, saying, 'Be quiet and come out of him.'" Verse 26 says, "Throwing him into convulsions, the unclean spirit cried out with a loud voice and came out of him. They were all amazed, so that they debated among themselves, saying, 'What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him.'" And notice, on the Sabbath, he continues to do this. He continues to kind of work. But what kind of work is it? It's work blessing man, releasing man from various burdens, giving man all kinds of rest. That's the purpose of the Sabbath, to be in gracious gratitude for the rest God wanted to give His people. How compassionate that He wants us to rest. He wants us to feel that. Not a burden. They twisted it. But notice again, after this moment, verse 29. "Immediately they came out of the synagogue," it's still the Sabbath day, "and they came into the house of Simon and Andrew." And he, by their definition, is still working. He says he sees, verse 30, "Simon's mother-in-law was lying sick with a fever, and immediately they spoke to Jesus about her, and he came to her and raised her up, taking her by the hand, and the fever left her, and she waited on them." Verse 32, "When evening came, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill, and those who were demon-possessed." And notice in verse 33, "The whole city had gathered at the door, and he healed many who were ill with various diseases, and cast out many demons, and he was not permitting the demons to speak." And so again, this new kind of reiterating the idea that Sabbath was to be a place of rest, a place of relieving man of his burdens. and showing that even on the Sabbath, Jesus was really relieving the most burdensome issues, disease, sicknesses, all the physical burdens that people could not escape from. He was giving them rest from that. And the Pharisees could not stand this. They couldn't handle this because that's not how they viewed the Sabbath. In their mind, this is an opportunity for me to show my self-righteousness before God, almost in kind of a competitive manner to try to draw God's a favor upon them for how disciplined they could make themselves and how little work they could really allow themselves to do. And it was not, they kind of twisted the meaning of it. And this constantly brought friction between Jesus and the religious leaders. Go over to John chapter 5, where again Jesus heals a man specifically on the Sabbath day, providing somebody rest from their affliction of their disease. They were unable to walk. This is a paralytic. In John chapter 5, note verse 8, here's a man who is by the pool of Bethesda. And remember, it says any time the waters were stirred, whoever got in there would be healed of their affliction. This poor guy, he has nobody to help him. Every time he tries to get close, someone steps in before him and he can't get the healing. And Jesus looks at him in compassion, and what does he say in verse 8? Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your pallet and walk." Immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet and began to walk. Now, again, it was the Sabbath on that day. So note verse 10. So the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not permissible for you to carry your pallet." But he answered them, "He who made me well was the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Pick up your pallet and walk?'" By the way, we see a contrast between, you know, a compassionate servant and self-righteous, kind of competitive individuals who gladly kind of put excessive burdens on individuals, making it exceedingly difficult for them to find any way, any wiggle room to even find any compassion of God at all. And even as he's been healed of his affliction, they're claiming that this man is sinning by carrying his pallet. And we see again over in John chapter 9, Jesus compassionately heals a blind man who was blind from birth. And guess what? It's the Sabbath day. And Jesus blatantly breaks all kinds of nitpicky rules they had. You know, they had these kind of silly rules that would define work. You couldn't do this with your fingers or kneading because that was work. You couldn't spit on the ground because if you spit, kind of got near maybe some seedling, maybe cause it to grow a little bit. Well, that's gardening or harvesting or something, you know, causing something to grow. You couldn't wash your face because that's working. Well, Jesus broke off three of those restrictions with this man in John chapter 9. It says in verse 6, he meets a man who was blind from birth. In verse 6 says, when he had said this, he spat on the ground, made clay of the spittle, and applied the clay to his eyes, and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went away and washed, and came back seeing. But the problem is, verse 13, it's the Sabbath day. They brought to the Pharisees the man who was formerly blind. And there was a Sabbath on the day when Jesus made the clay, opened his eyes. And the Pharisees also were asking him again how he received his sight. And he said to them, "He applied clay to my eyes, and I washed and I see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees were saying, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." Notice again, Jesus trying to send a message that the Sabbath should be a moment of appreciating compassionate blessing that gives rest and release to people. That's not the way the Pharisees looked at it. Hence, in their misunderstanding of the Sabbath, they become actually cruel in their approach to serving God and how they looked at others who attempted to serve God. Not only did they misunderstand the Sabbath, but they were misapplying the Sabbath. Note what Jesus calls them on in Mark chapter 2. Not only were they misunderstanding it, but in their misunderstanding it, they became very hypocritical in their observance of the Sabbath. Because again, not only were they not very compassionate to individuals, they kind of picked and chose how they applied the Sabbath to themselves, because it was an opportunity for competitiveness. It was an opportunity to see, well, how can I call somebody on just the slightest infraction so that nobody kind of looks at me as being somebody who doesn't revere God and holiness, and I'm going to be the one who excels in all this above everybody else. But when you're doing it that way, there's really no, you're not genuine in your spirit. You're going to mess up. You're going to be hypocritical in your own application. And they were that way. Notice in Mark chapter 2, in verse 27, he says, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to kill?" And so in other words, it's kind of interesting. What he calls when he says, I want to ask you a question. Apparently in your view, it's not okay for me to restore this man's hand back to full use this day. But it is okay for you guys to get together and conspire to kill me. Because that's what it says after he heals the man. It says in verse 6 of Mark chapter 3, "The Pharisees went out and immediately began conspiring with the Herodians against him as to how they might destroy him." In other words, they're going to violate their own definition of what work was on the Sabbath. You can't heal somebody, but we can conspire as to how we're going to get rid of you. And that's what happens, really, when you're blinded by your own desire to kind of be in a competitive spirit, to kind of just be above and beyond what anybody else is meeting in terms of holiness and righteousness, and trying to just stay so straight, you're going to be very harsh in your application to with others, and you're going to be very hypocritical in your application to yourself. You know, cause all kinds of loopholes for yourself. You know, even Jesus called them on that. He said, "How many of you, they're saying that I'm sinning on the Sabbath? If you, any one of you had an oxen that had fallen in a ditch, would not stop and help him out?" And he knew every one of them would have done it. And so they misunderstood the Sabbath. They misapplied the Sabbath. And they dishonored the Sabbath. Remember the last part of that command? Remember the Sabbath. To keep it holy. It was a way of drawing closer to God in holiness, of appreciating His compassion, appreciating a compassionate God that wanted to provide rest and comfort to His people. And they really used the Sabbath to just cause other people to look at them as being so righteous, excelling above everybody else, really as a pretense that Jesus later calls them on. So that widows and people in helpless situations would really trust them more. Someone as holy and righteous as this, I can trust them with my estate. And simply used it so they could fat their own pocketbooks and gain their own material possessions. And then in that sense, they dishonored the Sabbath. They weren't compassionate. They weren't serving others. And their eyes and hearts were wholly on material wealth. And so that's what he says in Matthew 23, verse 14, he says, "Because you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers." And so the point I want to make with bringing that out is that there were some people who had much worse withered hands than the actual guy that he heals. The guy that he heals is really becomes an example for us of showing how many times we may be in need spiritually to have withered hands restored also. And that really the Pharisees, they had withered hands from lack of compassion. From lack of compassion. When we serve God in such a way that we're just kind of really in a self-serving way, kind of just kind of almost in a competitive manner to kind of see how straight I can possibly stand in such a way that it kind of looms over everybody around me. And I lose sight of really what the whole purpose of coming to God is. We all have to come to God in a sense of humility, recognizing that we all need mercy, we all need forgiveness, we all have weaknesses, we all have things that God compassionately is working with us on. And what's interesting is that Jesus continually showed over and over again, and he shows, with healing the man on this day, this is just one of several examples of just how Jesus truly just excelled in compassion. Which is really why he was specifically chose to demonstrate perhaps the greatest moments of compassion on the Sabbath day. To show this is what this is about. All the commands of God, all the requirements are really so that we might develop a sense and an awe of how truly merciful God is in our sinfulness. In our need to come before Him and how unworthy we all are. And yet how willing He is, how compassionate He looks at our situation. And so in this sense, he needs to give withered hands a sense of compassion. Notice in Matthew chapter 9, verse 13, Jesus quotes this again in another moment where the Pharisees just fail to see this and comprehend it. He said, go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus constantly tried to reclaim and redirect the misguided way that most of the religious leaders were leading and directing people. Again, in that sense of clamoring for a position of leadership because of how righteous they looked. But it was all hypocritical. It was all image. And the true, genuine ones that Jesus was looking for, and it's demonstrated in the Sermon on the Mount, are those individuals who first and foremost have a poor spirit, who are poor in spirit, who are honest, who recognize truly how unworthy we are to be approved of God, and grateful for how merciful He is to help us in that issue. And I just want to go through a couple of examples that show just how Jesus, in His example, is able to truly give us who maybe have struggled to develop that, or maybe have issues with that, that Jesus is also able to restore withered hands who lack compassion. The more time we spend with Him to be able to develop that. But notice how Matthew chapter 14 and verse 14. Just one basic statement there. It says, when He went ashore, He saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. And this phrase we're going to see over and over and over again. The more you spend time with Jesus, you can't really get past that. It's really one of the most overwhelming concepts and traits about Him, as to the length of His compassion. Not only do we see how compassionate He is, but we see how far He goes in His compassion. For example, go to Matthew chapter 15 and verse 32. This is one of my favorite verses highlighting the compassion of Jesus. And it basically says, when we talk compassion, we're talking about an individual who literally considers every nuance, every particular issue of our life, and kind of lays them out. He takes the time to think about how much it bothers us, how much all the components of our life kind of all add up and bring a sort of weight upon our shoulders and brings us down. And He takes it all into consideration. Matthew 15, verse 32, He says, and Jesus called His disciples to Him and said, I feel compassion for the people because they have remained with Me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, for they might faint on the way. Every time I read that particular verse in that particular instant, I can't help but see a major contrast between really the dismissive sense of compassion that the disciples have. In what sense were the disciples kind of dismissive about their compassion for the hungry crowd? Their first thing is, just, what's the easiest thing? Just tell them to go away and find food in another town. They'll find it. There's towns around. So they'll just keep walking. They'll find it. They'll get there. And Jesus takes a moment and He demonstrates what's going through His mind. When we see statements say Jesus is compassionate, we see it's amazing. Like a microscope. He is able to zero in on every nitty bitty, just the slightest piece of discomfort that maybe no one else knows about. He considers it and He weighs it all in, and He realizes how much it bothers us, how much it affects us. And He considers that in ways that how He might give us rest from those things, how He might release those burdens from us. And He goes to such detail. He says, no, well, I realize they've been with Me 3 days, have nothing to eat, and so I'm not going to send them away now because they are so hungry, they might actually faint on the way. So we got to find a way to take care of this situation right now. Another example that demonstrates to the length that He goes, and sometimes it's very, it kind of steps on my toes when I try to, see how compassionate I can be. And realize that I've got a long ways to go also to kind of develop that compassion of Jesus. And I've maybe some have a withered hand when it comes to my compassion. That how much do I allow the suffering and the issues and the distraught of the situation of people's lives? Do I take the time to hear? Or the minute that someone comes, you see someone maybe with, you can just kind of tell that they're carrying a load. And all you're thinking in your mind is like, well, how can we give the quickest solution so they can just get away from me? How do we give the quickest kind of a dismissive answer that now it's no longer my problem? And they no longer have to burden me. And Jesus showed that the disciples struggled with it. Disciples sometimes had that mindset. What's the quickest way to just get rid of this crowd so it no longer was bothering them? And that's really a withered hand of compassion. It doesn't go far enough. This is that hand did not go far enough. Jesus wanted to give it full force to be able to have full movement. And our compassion needs to be as strong and as far-reaching as Jesus is. It has to go the extra mile. It has to go all the way to the very depths of actually wanting to know what bothers people. Having a listening, compassionate ear that says, yes, let's sit and let's talk about it. Tell me everything. Tell me every detail. You know how many times when someone's going through those details, oh, okay, can we wrap this up? All right, that's about enough. Okay. And we start really quickly thinking, what's the quickest way I get this person out of the way, and now I don't have to deal with it. That's kind of a withered hand of compassion. Another great example that I see is with this widow. I love this. In Luke chapter 7, verse 12. Someone go ahead, if you have that, read Luke 7, verses 12 through 13. Now, what's truly interesting to me is notice the length of the detail of the situation. It's not just someone who's lost a dead relative. It's more than that. And yet sometimes we might say, well, that isn't that enough? Someone's mourning someone who's close to them. Isn't that enough? No, there's more. There's more here that adds to the level of her grief. Look at verse 12. Why does it tell us that this was the only son of his mother, and she was a widow? Why do we need to know that? Every detail is now another kind of just that weight pressing down further and further and further. And Jesus, when he sees this woman, notice what it says. He says to her, it says, verse 13, what's that word? When the Lord saw her, he felt what? He felt compassion for her. And so notice it says, he came up and touched the coffin, and the bearers came to a halt. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. Well, this truly is amazing that he causes a dead man to rise up again. But that's not the extent of the miracle. The true amazing miracle that Jesus performs is not just raising a dead man back to life. He is trying to heal a broken, wounded heart. Because notice, it doesn't stop with just get up and rise. What happens after he says, he got up and he rose? Verse 15, the dead man sat up and began to speak. And note the next thing. Jesus gave him back to his mother. A mother who's lost her only child, who's a widow, who is all alone. And I'll tell you, that convicts me, because when I'm visiting a widow, and you say, well, how are you? I feel alone. Yeah, I know how that is. Really? Or is it, well, lay it on me. Lay it on me. What about today has been really, really hard about you feeling alone? Well, you know, today was my late husband's birthday. And I've been thinking about him today. In addition to that, my daughter had this special meal she used to make, and no, she's not longer with us, and so we don't have that to share. All those little details mean something. And Jesus, when it says Jesus feels compassion, he takes into consideration all of that. And so that's the true question. Do I have to have him restore my hand of compassion, or can it be withered? Is it going far enough? Jesus has that way that he truly demonstrated that. The reason he did so is because ultimately to show us that we need to have that kind of compassion, that kind of level, and that kind of level of distraught that individuals have in their life. Because ultimately, that is what brings people in the situation of their sinfulness to come out of it, to respond to the compassionate Lord who sympathizes with our sins. And yet so many times we see a contrast of people who aren't even willing to be compassionate about the situation of people's lives and what has brought sin in their life. Turn over to Luke chapter 7. And I always love this. This is a moment where Jesus again shows how, again, someone with a withered hand of compassion dealing with someone who has a long storied history with their sinful past and character. And in Luke chapter 7, in verse 36, says, "Now one of the Pharisees was requesting him to dine with him. And he entered the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And there was a woman in the city who was a sinner. And when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster vial of perfume. And standing behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and kept wiping them with the hair of her head and kissing his feet and anointing them with the perfume." Now, you know what's interesting about that is here is essentially a woman who we later learn has been forgiven of her sin. She's been impacted by the teaching and the preaching of Jesus. And she comes and she wants to demonstrate her gratitude of someone who's been so compassionate because of the situation of her sin. What we find about Jesus is when Jesus learns that people are sinners, just as he knows all the storied details of why someone's hurting, why someone's in pain, why someone is mourning a lost loved one, Jesus takes into all the consideration of what brought a safe individual who was once right in God's sight to become a sinner. He knows all the little details of what caused someone to kind of lose their dedication, kind of lose their faith, start losing their love, start losing their trust in the Lord. And he takes into consideration all those moments of their life that brought them down. And so in some, essentially this is what we're basically we're trying to help bring our minds to is the fact that Jesus shows us over and over again to what extent he's willing to bring that sense of withered compassion back to life. Very quickly, I just have a few more minutes here really quickly, just kind of get to a couple of the points. One of the things he could do is he could bring our withered hand that sometimes has a lack of service. Again, that's one of the problems of the Pharisees was that in their self-righteousness, they weren't very, very good service. They weren't serving the needs of this individual who had been positioned there on the Sabbath. And one of the great lessons we have of Jesus in serving and his compassion is of the Samaritan who sees the man who's been left for dead on the side of the road, Luke 10, verse 33 to 34. It says, "But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him. When he saw him, he felt compassion, came to him and bandaged up his wounds." Notice why we have to have a withered hand that lacks compassion to be restored is because only when our compassion is restored are we free to then do something about it and have our hands free to be active and busy and useful to meet those specific needs. One great example I love is of Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus demonstrates something truly amazing about what he knew about Jesus. If you turn over to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, here's a man that's kind of being dismissed by the crowd. Remember, he was crying out. He was a blind man crying out for Jesus. It says they came to Jericho in verse 46, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples, a large crowd, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road. And when he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many were sternly telling him to be quiet, but he kept crying out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." I always love this, where Bartimaeus, so many people in the crowd are telling him, "We don't have time for you. You're kind of a pest. You're kind of annoying. We're on our way to Jerusalem to see some big, big, huge things that Jesus is going to accomplish there because he's a great king, right? He's going to be anointed king there in Jerusalem. We've got big, big things. We've got our enemies we're going to destroy. All these things are going on, and everyone's clamoring to be a part of it." And here's this blind beggar, this nobody in the crowd. And he refuses to be quiet. And the reason he refuses to be quiet is because he knows what kind of a king Jesus is. He says, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And I love the reason why he says it, because there's a great moment in Luke chapter 4. In verse 18, remember when the prophet Isaiah is given to Jesus to read? And he reads the section that talks about how he was anointed to bring good news to the poor, and to open the eyes of the blind, and to restore all the fallen, to give grace and compassion to those who are needy. Bartimaeus realizes, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people who needs to be served by the king. And he has all this faith and this trust that, yes, Jesus is willing to do that. But the sad thing is that most of the people around him have lost sight of this. Just like the Pharisees. Like back up one of the passages in Mark chapter 10, a few verses over. Mark chapter 10 and verse 35. We'll just kind of stop here and wrap this up here. Verse 35 says, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory." Kind of a selfish request. I want to be able to look good right next to you, the most important one, when you come into your glory. And notice how Jesus kind of tries to correct them. He says, "I see a withered hand here, a withered hand that lacks the willingness to utilize the purposes why I've even brought you into listening and learning from me." In verse 41, it says, "Hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. Calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, 'You know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." And just as the Pharisees in Mark chapter 3 were very dismissive of the man with the withered hand, Jesus shows over and over again that that's a great need for us to realize that we have often withered hands when we fail again to humble ourselves, appreciate the great compassion of Jesus, be in awe of that, and then as we enlist ourselves to serve him, to then have our hands full and open to be useful in serving all the needs of those around us, to show our compassion for the lost, our compassion for individuals who suffer, we might bring them to the compassionate, merciful hands of Jesus. So that's about the time we have. We'll stop there. And I appreciate so much that we've listened and read those verses when we had a chance to look at them.